is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
Next on News for the Soul, it's time for LifeWise with Joff Talbot. Joff is a healer, researcher of meta-science, and the creator of LifeWise, creating life balance through conversation, group work, and practice. Following an awakening in 2013, Joff's path to the spiritual cracked wide open. He combined his healing experience over 2 decades with a 20-year career working with youths as a youth manager in England. His quest to help find our way back from ourselves to ourselves in the shortest way possible. Please welcome Joff back to News for the Soul.
So, welcome to LifeWise Radio, Mike Oram. So, I first bumped into Mike the Awake and Aware conference in Watford, UK, real recently. So that's 2021. When was it? That was only a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it? So
yeah, July. 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago. Of which Mike's stories just blew me away. Mike was a speaker at the event, 2 day event. Sort of 10, 11 speakers in total, and Mike was one of them, and I was jaw-dropped by Mike's experiences and just way of being that I just went to kind of get in contact and sort of touch base and read books and just sort of soak up Mike and see, well, selfishly, where that kind of tapped in with my kind of own experience and trying to piece things together as well. So I don't know how you kind of class Mike as an experiencer of not off-world, I don't like that term kind of thing, but I don't know, being experiences, which then people would call other ET experiences and such, or experiencer, I don't know, it's a developing terminology, I guess, of which Mike has had a whole wonderful life of experiencing. So we will get into a lot of Mike's experiences and ultimately where this then links in with us all, and where we are headed at this very moment in time, which is something I'm very fascinated with. So welcome to the show, Mike. How you doing, sir?
That's great. It's lovely to touch base with you again. I know we didn't actually meet at the conference. I don't know why, but you got in touch afterwards. And yes, it's nice to come onto your show and have a little chat.
Well, it means a lot kind of coming on, and also wonderful to have, like we were saying before, so for folks who are unaware that we were just talking for the last hour anyways, we'll cover a lot that we were just talking about because it just flowed so wonderfully, about how a humble, so-called ordinary person can have extraordinary moments in life. And then where that kind of leads us down a merry path, which certainly doesn't seem to fit with what is on offer amongst the mainstream of things these very days, which then I'll paint a picture in itself, I would say. So, Mike, how would you sort of genuinely introduce yourself? Because, you know, no websites, and you know, you're an author of 2 books, may I say, so Does It Rain in Other Dimensions, a true story of alien encounters, of which I am 2/3 of the way through, and I'm stuck at a bit because, as we were just explaining, I'm just jaw-dropped by it, so I'm now word for word in it. The Zen of Ben, which I'm reading to my little boy as we speak, well, not right now, clearly, but I love it, it's wonderful, and I can only encourage people to get it. But how would you introduce yourself to a kind of a platform like this?
Well, I've had experiences all my life. So to me, although they might seem extraordinary to some people, it is my life. It's a part of my life ever since I was a child. So I don't know anything different. So I might come across a bit blasé about it, but I suppose you would if you know, after, well, I'm 70 now, that my first experience was when I was 4. yeah, it just becomes a natural mm-hmm. part of life. And I must say, millions of others, I'm not out there on my own, there are millions of other people that are having similar experiences and hopefully sharing them with other people. And it is helping in a very small way to open these people up to other or greater realities and who we are as a human being, because we're much more than that.
Oh yeah, and ultimately I guess this is what this show would then be pointing at anyway, just by default anyway.
Yes.
As we were talking about, this has been part of the dots joining journey that I've been on myself. And so you can't escape the fact that we know so little about how good we are. Plus, I've got to say, it also says about how we've been kind of led down a focus on how not to be for many, many hundreds, thousands of years, about how fear and the more kind of nefarious ways of cajoling people then takes all of your attention and puts you down a certain kind of way. Well, that's just, I mean, that can happen, and it's powerful to the people who kind of want that to happen, and actually kind of fair play, because we've gone along with it for a long time, and they've had their way, which is very creative, if not utterly destructive, but it also shows that can be done. So as we creep ourselves out of that timeline, it's then looking at, well, what can we do? And your experiences and others, like you said, there's millions. Point two, you have no clue how beautiful things really kind of can be. So shall we kind of go to your early days then, Mike? You said like when it's four, we thought this would be a good place to kind of start. So what do you say to kind of...
Yeah, that's fine. We'll start there, because that's when I suppose I really started to think about other things apart from just in this 3D reality. I was 4 years old. Now, I was born in the East End of London, in Stratford. So I'm a Cockney, as some of you may notice in my accent, which is never gone, even though I left there a long while ago. Well, we lived in a very small terraced house, and my aunt and her family lived downstairs, and we lived upstairs. It was all open plan. It was a tiny little living room, and I was standing there. So I was 1955, so I was 4 years old. I was standing in the living room talking to my mother. Now, before I start, some people have said to me, well, how can a child of four use such terminology? But I had visions that come into my head. And along with those visions came the words to explain to my mother what I was seeing. So I started to say to her, there is no such thing as death, Mum. And I went on, I won't go into that part now, but I went on to explain that our soul went on for forever. But then I said to her, and also, Mum, you are not my real parents. And she was absolutely shocked, and she stepped back and she said, of course we are. You were born in this house. And I said, well, you are my parents as far as bringing me onto this earth, but my real parents are out there in space. And I pointed up into the sky. And then, if that wasn't enough, I then went on and said to her, and also, Mum, something of incredible importance is going to happen on this planet that will affect all units of consciousness, whether it be mineral, vegetable, animal, or man. And I said, not in your lifetime, Mum, but in mine. Well, Mum died 30 years ago, but we talked about this for the next few decades. She was always bringing it up, asking what I meant. And as I've got slightly older, still quite young, but slightly older, I realised that this something of incredible importance, this amazing event that is going to happen, whatever it was, because I didn't know that, it was going to wake people up and move them on into a higher frequency. And it would be a totally different type of existence than what they were in at that time. Now, of course, with this experience, it was only recently, perhaps 3 years ago, someone said to me, well, it hasn't happened yet, has it? I said, what? Well, this big event that you said was going to happen when you were four, in your lifetime. Well, you're 70 now. You might be dead before it happens. And I said, no, I won't. This event will happen in my lifetime, and it will wake people up. And then, of course, about a year later, we came into this particular thing that's going on now, what's been going on in the last 20 months, which I will not say too much about.
No need.
But this is now starting people up. The people that are asleep and stuck in this 3D reality and basically controlled by what they read in the media and what they see on the TV, and for some reason that I cannot understand, they just accept what they are told. But people are waking up from that now, so it is going to have a momentous effect, and it will be incredibly exciting. It's an exciting time to be here for me, and this is only me personally. This to me is like a sort of Armageddon. It's like the battle of light over dark. And I've said for decades that you have to have this pulling, this magnetic pull between the two things to help us grow and to make choices, etc., etc. And this is what's happening now. And I think it's an honour to be here at this time. As I say, millions of people have come here from other star systems at this time, well, certainly this last century. I mean, they've always been coming, but not en masse like they are now.
Sure.
All in their own way, our own small little way, trying to wake up people. I used to throw out, if I was talking to, I still do it today, but not as, like when I was younger in my 70s, I mean, in the 1970s, I mean, I was so incredibly keen, and I used to go on TV programs, I'd be in newspapers, I'd get set up left, right and centre, make myself look a fool, but didn't matter. But now I'm just a bit more cautious, especially with the media.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they were just exciting times. But today, if I'm in conversation with someone, I might not know them, and they might say, oh, well, what do you do then? You know, and I say, well, I've lectured all around the world about UFOs and my contacts just to see what comes back.
Sure.
Nothing comes back. It's like they haven't even heard it.
Oh, that's nice, dear.
not even that. And then you say, well, you know, well, I've actually met people. You know, this is always my next bit, to see if there's anything there. Mm-hmm. And I've been on the craft. I've spoken to them. And there's nothing. Now, you think people would say, what? Tell me about it. You know, tell me one of these experiences. This is amazing. No, there's nothing. There's nothing that comes back. And that's when you leave it alone and you move on.
Mm-hmm.
But you give the opportunity. That's not in a big-headed way. I'm talking here about just for someone that might want to realise there's greater realities, not just going on out there, but here, on Mother Earth too.
Yeah.
So that's really when it started, and it opened my whole mind up. And because shortly after that, I started to meet one of my, who I call, for want of a better word, my space brothers.
Yeah, go on, please.
Soul, in a way, a soul group, I suppose.
Yeah.
But they might
as in, I've read Journey of Souls, so Dr. Michael Newton. Have you bumped into that before? where it sort of, it goes into kind of like soul family groups and that sort of thing. It's just,
well,
just what you said just then just reminded me, that's all.
Well, I found that out through when I said to you earlier where I done healing through an altered state of awareness,
mm-hmm.
where you got in touch with the person's deeper self, their greater self, and asked the greater self to take you to where the issue started that this person may have come to you about.
Mm-hmm.
And they would take you there straight away, and it could last 3 or 4 hours, and you'd go, 99 times out of 100, you would go into another lifetime that they experienced, and they would go into it in the most incredible and amazing detail. But it worked, because if you could get to the root of the problem, you could do something about it. You're not just covering it over with a tablet or something. So, yeah, soul groups were a big part of that. So although I call them my space family, in a way it's like a sort of a soul group that it's doing other things out there on giant spaceships.
Sure. Is that like your parents as well? Because when you said to your mum, I'm just trying to think, you know, I can kind of picture that moment. Your mum's, you know, Earth mum is like, right, okay, no, I'm pretty sure I gave birth to you. But here we are, age 4. So when you say then, you know, your real parents are out there, then you know where there is. Have you kind of met them? Or...
Yes, I've met them many
obviously
times.
Obviously with Telos, which I know you will go into at some point, but I haven't bumped into the parent bits. I thought I'd ask.
Yeah, no, I've been on the spaceships. Some of the ones I've been on are absolutely gigantic. They are like floating cities. They are just incredible. And they're from, and I've only started mentioning this last 2 years, even though I've been lecturing since 1970, from the Sirian system. I think it's time for people to own up to where they come from.
It's useful, obviously.
Yeah, well, hopefully it will help some people. Yes, but I mean, there's many star systems that are coming here at the moment, and they're not all bad. Most of them are good, and most of them are here to try and help us through this incredible change.
Would you liken? Because it seems to me when you've kind of got a vulnerable, scared, ignorant setup, you know, and then you've got someone kind of running that show, you know, the survival of the fittest and all the things that are drummed into us, then that we've been kind of led down this merry path of which we've allowed to be because we haven't known really another way, and you've had some help and support, you know, your Jesus and your Buddhas and your other wonderful ascended masters and such, boys and girls who have been here and then basically been not treated overly nice on the big scheme of things, and then myriad of your average human having these experiences but then encouraged to kindly shut up, / let's burn all the witches type stuff, and then wars perpetual. So basically all this stuff that it then kind of puts people in a certain place of expectancy and acceptance of, you know, well, it's not massively happening to me, so I guess I'll pay in to people, you know, it's keeping us going, isn't it? And I've never understood that. Never. There's too much. I just go, well, that doesn't make sense. Neither does that. And I don't accept that's the right way of doing it. So I've always worked with young people that there's two lives you've got. The earth you, you know, the you that you've got to try and navigate this plane, and well done if you do. Let's work at this, you know, get your CV set up and all that kind of stuff. And then there's the you, which is, okay, who are you? What do you want? And all that good stuff. Where I'm kind of aiming this is that what we're going through now, is that kind of then linking in through our star brothers and sisters, our greater family, as we kind of need a bit of a wake or a slap awake for a lot of people in order to understand that you got to stop relying on people that don't like you.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I mean,
Yeah, all right, cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm 70 now, and I'm perhaps a tad more cautious going out there. I used to think I could force people to listen to me. I don't mean physically. You know, you will listen to this. You know, but today I thought that you get a bit tired of people that are still, you know, it's not necessarily there because we're living in an incredibly strictly controlled system where the truth is hid from us everywhere you go, and even more so now because you can't even say anything without it being taken down. I mean, that's not going to last, but it just, you know, in a way you can't blame people. I mean, I came here with an open mind. I seem to have come here with a woken mind.
Nice.
And so it's not been any different. But yeah, the space people, the off-worlders, you can use whatever term. I quite like the word off-worlders, but they will help you if they think it's necessary. Now, Telos will, it does work, well, they all do, I think, with within strict karmic laws, and some of those are that you must not interfere in the evolution of a planet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can help in an indirect way, and I could touch on that later on if we get round to talking about when I met Telos along the lane, when you had heard that one where he tells me then. I mean, my partner used to say, well, you know, why can't he sort of give you the lottery numbers or something? And I say, well, it doesn't work like that. Yeah, mm-hmm. Because you're influencing somebody's life. He will, you know, he will only tell me as a sort of guidance or something. But we could touch on that later. But my desire when I was younger was so strong, and I could tell you one experience with my dad. Now, I don't know with your listeners how many of them will even be aware of what happened in Warminster and Wiltshire in the 60s and 70s. A lot of people won't even know what I would be talking about, but it was an incredible place, and it was known around the world for this incredible UFO flap that went on for several years. But we won't go into that now. I ended up living down there because it was so amazing. And I did meet Telos, and he did give me a message, which we might be able to read out later. We'll see how the time goes. But we had this thing. I'd gone down with a couple of friends, and we'd gone for the whole week, and we had the most amazing week. Landings, these lights that would answer our torches, and other lights that would come out of those lights that we called brain lights, because they would come and hover around us. One of them shone this light on the car when we were sitting inside it, and the electrics played up, and when a mechanic put his spanner on the bonnet, it stuck to the bonnet. I mean, it was an amazing week. And I got back home on the Sunday at midnight, and Mum and Dad were still waking up because they wouldn't go to bed until I was back home. I mean, I was old enough to be like my own car, for goodness sake, you know, but that's how they were, bless them. But I came bursting through the front door at midnight, and I just laid upon them that this whole incredible week that had just happened. And my dad was looking at me sort of possibly wondering what he had helped to give birth to. My mother listened. She had experiences. And whenever I used to question my mother about certain things that happened, she used to just turn around and say, well, I'm the seventh child of a seventh child. Not me, but my mother was saying that about herself. And this was her answer to everything. But she did used to see things, and she used to tell me about it, and she would listen to what I was saying. But my dad, he did question. I went into meditation for a couple of days or more, and I said, look, you know, you tell me to go somewhere at a certain time, and I will go there, and you might you might appear in the spacecraft. It might even land and I will meet you and have a chat to you. I'm going to ask you to answer my need here. So I said, I need you to come so that my dad can see you because he doesn't believe you exist. At the time, I was only what? It was 1970, so I was about 19. And I was working at the Ford Motor Company in Dagenham. And it was a three-shift system. And this particular week, I was working from 10 o'clock at night to 6 o'clock in the morning. So I used to go to bed about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Mum would wake me up at 9, something quick to eat, and I'd shoot off to work. But I was so used to being woken up. Now, if they wake me up, and this has gone on for decades, if they wake me up, and it's not always the good guys, but we won't go into that now because there has been a lot of hybrid work with parts of my body. But if they would wake me up, you would always wake up absolutely wide awake. There was never any drowsiness, never understood that, how it was done. I woke up, it was 10 to 8. And I had a telepathic message, and it said to me, go and look outside of your parents' bedroom window. I jumped out of bed. I went through, moved the curtains, had a look outside, and hovering above the house was this huge silver globe. And it was almost, it must have been like the electromagnetism or something around it, because it was like bits of crystal were like coming off of it, shooting off of the edges. I went downstairs. Mum was in the kitchen preparing my evening meal, so she missed the whole thing. I didn't think of going in to tell my mother. My dad was sitting in the armchair. So I calmly said to him, would you like to see one of those flying saucers, Dad? And it sort of tongue-in-cheek, he said, yeah, wouldn't mind, son. So I said, go and open the front door, step outside and have a look. And he opened the front door. Now, my dad never got excited. I used to call him a reliable plodder, never missed a day at work, but it'd be in his own speed. And he stepped outside. He looked up and saw this huge silver ball of light hovering over the house. And he said, go and get the binoculars. So I went and got the binoculars for him. He was looking through them. And I was looking at him and looking up the object, and I felt so proud that my dad was seeing this thing. And after about four minutes, possibly tops, but certainly 2 or 3 minutes, I wasn't speaking to them. I just thought in my head that it was waiting for quite a while in a built-up area. And I got a telepathic message back, and it said, if we went away too soon, it said, your father would go back inside and sit down and have some way to explain it away. Mm. But by waiting for this amount of time, he will fully take into his consciousness what he was seeing, and he would never forget it. And then it started to move across the road, and we were starting to lose it over the apex of the house opposite. So then my dad, again, excited, quick, he said, upstairs! And he flew up the stairs. I mean, I was running for my country and I couldn't keep up with him. And we got into their bedroom, and he ran across towards the window. Now, one thing you never done in my mum's house was touch her net curtains. Now, she had some sort of divine sixth sense because she always knew if the net curtains were touched, and I would memorize where all the pleats were. And I was absolutely certain I put all the pleats back in the same place, but she still knew they'd been tampered with. But her loving son, her loving son could get away with it. But it was more than my dad's life was worth to touch the net curtains. But today was different because this incredible craft was outside the house. He got to the curtains and he practically ripped them off the rail. And for that moment in time, I was more concerned about the damage he had done to the net curtains than this amazing craft outside. And he flung open the window, and we both stood there watching it. And it went about a mile away over to the River Thames, and it stopped, and you could see it reflecting in the water below. And then it done something which is classic with these off-world craft. It stopped for about 3 or 4 seconds. It moved to the left and stopped for about 2 seconds, and then it shot off into the sky at the most incredible speed, so fast my dad didn't even see it go. He just said, where's it gone? And I said, it's just shot straight up into the sky, Dad. Now, he never mentioned it again for the rest of his life. And Mum died about 30 years ago, and Dad died about 26 years ago. Because once Mum died, my dad went downhill very quickly. Mm. Eventually, he had to go into hospice. I was living 300 miles away, and I was driving up and down the motorway like a yo-yo, making sure everything was in place for him before he went into the hospice, and then when he went into the hospice. And then I went down to see him again the following week, and I went into his room in the hospice, and they must have, like, propped him up in the bed. And he didn't look like my dad at all, because he was white, and his face was, like, sunken. He used to be able to talk about the war all his life, but he couldn't even do that today. And I was trying to have a conversation with him, so I started talking about the war. There was nothing come back at all. He didn't answer me at all. And I was there about 2 to 3 hours. And I said to him, right, Dad, well, look, I've got to go now because I've got to get all the way back to the Lake District. And I got up, I kissed him on the forehead, and I started to leave the room. And he suddenly said, do you remember that light? Turned round, and I said to him, what light, Dad? He said, that light that hovered over the house. Now he's going back decades, 1970. Mm. And I came back in the room, and I said, do you remember that then, Dad? And he said, yes. So I sat down, and I said, well, tell me about it. And he told me about the whole episode. He didn't miss anything out, so it must have touched him. But is that not what they said? By waiting for this amount of time, he would fully take into his consciousness what he was seeing, and he would never forget it. But he never spoke about it otherwise. I got back to the Lake District 4 o'clock in the morning. There was a phone call from one of the nurses telling me he'd passed away in the night. So strangely enough, that was the last conversation I had with him before he left this earth, and it was about a UFO.
Ain't that a thing? Well, the irony.
The irony of it, yeah.
And, yeah. What? I don't know. It says a lot about the time. How old were you then at that point?
I was...
You were doing a throwing...
Yeah, in 1970, I was 19. But 1970 was an incredible year for some reason. So many amazing things happened. And I could tell you one more.
Yeah, go for it.
I was in Warminster, and I was given like a telepathic message. They told me to go out to a place called Star Hill. Now, when Warminster was famous all around the world and people came from all around the world, I eventually lived there and we set up an investigation centre and done a magazine, etc. Met some wonderful people, some weirdos, but some wonderful people. And most everyone would go up to a place called Cradle Hill. But it was great, because you could get 200-300 people up there and they'd all be talking about their experiences and things. It was wonderful.
Very cool.
But Star Hill, the other side of town, hardly anyone ever went to. You had to drive about a mile down this little dark track. There was no light pollution, and the energy there was just incredible. I only recently found out there was the remains of a medieval village there. I never knew about that. But that's where I was told to go, and that's where I had many of my amazing experiences. I had to go straight away. So I drove out in the car, parked up, I got out, I stood there looking around the sky, and then this light started coming over. Now, these are the words. I'll read the words out to you, if you like. Because
yeah, of course.
This is what I wrote down at the time. The bright star moved down over Scratchbury Hill, followed the contours of the summit, and came down into the field immediately in front of me. And there it hovered, just a few inches above the ground, and jewel-like, enticing me to move closer and observe. I walked nearer this glittering diamond from the sky and waited. I felt the blood pulsing through my veins. Both my heart and mind were eager in anticipation of what would happen next. Then a section of this glowing sphere grew more radiant, and from this radiance stepped two men. Two beautiful-looking men with shoulder-length silver hair and dressed in shiny silver clothing. The taller man held up his hand, palm open, with fingers pointing towards the sky. And in my mind, I heard the word, welcome. I automatically held my hand in the same way. And he said, you must open your mind before it is too late. How do you think you will react when faced with the knowing that you attract yourselves? So he was talking here about humanity, not necessarily me. My mind was open. But you attract yourselves. It did not have to be this way. You are fast heading towards the final stages of your transition. Energies are approaching from somewhere near the center of your galaxy that will give you the opportunity for change, the opportunity to shift your awareness and your eternal self into a higher dimension, a higher frequency, where you will find new horizons and become part of a much larger family and play a much more responsible role in the unfolding of this universe. You are, all of you, independent sparks of consciousness from the prime creator, the source of all that is. We are also aware of the universal law of free will, and we will not impose ourselves upon those who do not seek for enlightenment. We are here this evening in answer to your calling, and we warn you now of the dangers your planet faces in the upcoming years. She will need your help to bring her through into the new reality, the transition into a higher frequency dimension. Too many people are still asleep, numbed into submission. They stare into their TV screens and read the headlines of their newspapers and accept their lot. He then smiled, and I noticed, as he looked down, a mischievous glint in his eye as he continued. And they think you are weird, the strange boy who chases lights in the sky whilst talking of life on other planets. In the next few years, we will show ourselves more in the skies in the hope of waking up some of these lost souls. And you must play your part in the telling of this cosmic tale. Stay focused and true to yourself. Take time to meditate and concentrate your mind on your inner divine being. This will be your unfailing guide as we enter the troubled times of not only Gaia's transition, but also the up-tempo beat of control in your society. Whatever is thrown at you now, do please believe us when we tell you that they are frightened men. They need to keep the frequency down in order for their own survival. Otherwise, they will find their lives changed forever. And whether they accept their karmic debt or not, the balance sheets will need to be balanced. Yes, the ride ahead may be difficult, and that is entirely up to you and what you intend to do about the events being set into place. The final transition will be glorious to behold. The two men looked down and smiled, their bodies glowing silver in the dark night. The craft, which seemed sentient, itself watched and waited for the command to allow them to re-enter. They once again held their hands palm forward with fingers pointing to the sky. And as they stepped backwards, the craft increased its brilliance. And I knew this magical moment was about to end. They turned and walked through the radiant diamond as if blending into the essence of light. They returned from whence they had come, and the craft retreated to the starry heavens, stood for ages, I'm not sure how long, and wondered how many of those countless suns shining in the firmament also supported life. Eventually, I made my way back home, driving the car along the dark track and back to the main road, all the time scanning the sky for any sort of movement, in the vain hope of a sudden return of the radiant sphere of light. I'd met these men before, and I was quite sure we would meet again in the not-too-distant future, when I was never sure. And that was back in 1970.
Wow, I mean, the message is still the same. I guess when it comes to like linear time, and thanks for that, by the way, it's just profound. But, because we are in this time now and it is rapidly changing. We could have done a lot better without the boot on the neck, I suppose, you know. But we are where we are, and doing what we're doing. So those, you know, the light workers as such, and the idea of waking up, you know, it's become like a, you know, like the woke movement and stuff like that. And but it's not to be sniffed at. The whole point is what you were saying is exactly what is now in August 2021 and have been for a while. So hence 2020 debacle going forwards. But then there's different timelines at play here, aren't there? Not. And so this continues to be a clarion call for people just to get it. In all honesty, those that aren't getting it now, I kind of wonder what the situation is. If you're not getting it now, then are we talking about the last trickles of people? I don't know. For me, then, does it look like something major and a bit more on a world stage as such? Because this, you know, it is a stage, you know, I don't call it the Big Earth Show for nothing when it comes to something. And that would then, you know, cajole a few others. But then I wonder, what is the tipping point? What is the so-called critical mass? Or are we doing all right? Actually, there's a question, Mike. Are we doing all right? Because it seems to me, I feel like we are, in all honesty. I mean, that'll be me. I'd probably do that with an axe through my eyeball. We'll be all right. Very Monty Python, isn't it? but you know what I mean. Are we doing all right, do you reckon? Are we on a good timeline? I think we are. And many people say we are, the people who I prefer to listen to. What do you say?
Yeah, I think we're in a good place, really. I think it could have turned out differently, like that space message from 1970. If people had just woken up, you know, and God, did we try to wake people up just with the UFO stuff? I mean, it's much more involved now, but people have been waking up. I don't think we give enough credit. I don't think we realise how many people have woken up, how many people are now waking up. It's far more than what we think. And I think we are pretty close to a tipping point where it will shift this reality. And I think myself that the people, certainly the controllers, if you like, there's several names you could call them.
Yeah, controllers do.
And there's some you don't want to name over the air. But the controllers, the elite. But I think because of the frequency they're on, they don't seem to have a heart, a soul, morals, ethics. They don't seem to have anything like that. It's not like human beings, but then they're not all human beings. but that's another story. I like to dwell on the positive. I like to center myself with the love frequency. I don't want to sound too naffy.
Yeah, but it is accurate. I'm with you. So many cliches I don't like woke or spiritual or anything like that, even though they are what they mean at the same time. So I'm with you. It is a love frequency. I was talking to, sorry to stop you there, you just completely remind me of Matt Presti, who's the president of the University of Science and Philosophy, and I interviewed him like ages ago. I love him. And he's saying that on the work of Walter Russell's work, who's Nikola Tesla's good buddy, and he said that it's not about raising your frequency. He says it's about bringing it down so you're in a calmer place at the same time, of which I can wrap my head around, because we're so busy and so focused on stuff that you don't need to be. I can understand that. At the same time, it is, I believe, a raising of a love frequency, because that is the difference to me.
Yeah,
and I'm with you. It sounds kind of cheesy, but let's roll with it, Mike, because I think it's actually quite important. I agree.
I think you've got to keep your frequencies high, and this is what they told me in 1970. And people have to try and raise their frequencies. In fact, I emailed you something I wrote down.
Have you got it? I don't mind finding it.
Yeah, I've got it here. These are my
so
own...
you know, we've got about
what we've got
15-ish
left.
Minutes, roughly,
right.
Which isn't heaps, but here
I'll
we are.
Read this very quickly.
That's
then.
All good. Well, it's not a big piece, is it?
These are just my own thoughts of where we are now, and what I wrote down and emailed you was that C19 is making us wake up to a better and different way of living, and we can change the world into something quite beautiful. And I think many of us have lost the way somewhat and lost our spiritual direction. And in a way, we have allowed the dark to move in and create havoc. But this pulling between these two opposites of light and dark forces us to make choices and rethink about who we really are and what do we really want. Perhaps now is the time to reevaluate our journey and reconnect to our spiritual life. We have reached that point in time when even the closed-minded of us are starting to question what is happening and what is our purpose on this beautiful Mother Earth. Exciting times indeed. And I think, you know, I think that is where we are with
indeed.
This. It is now forcing us awake. Now, would this have happened if, like you said, what would have happened if we'd woken up sooner? No, it wouldn't have happened. We would have moved on and the world would have been in a much better place. We would have had the technologies that have been hidden from us for decades that would have kept Mother Earth happy herself. Now, let's not forget, she's hanging on here, you know, to allow us all to live on this surface, humans, animals, minerals, vegetables. We have to give her some sort of credit, and she'll be getting a good payback soon. But she wants to move on. She's fed up with this sort of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Wandering around our own skin. But now I think that we've got to be forced awake, and I think that's what this event is making us do.
I hugely agree. And, love chatting with you, Mike, because I think it's vital and actually really exciting. Can we squeeze in? Oh, there's too much. Would you mind us doing the part two on this, Mike?
You can do a part three if you want, because there's a lot to get through.
Isn't there just? I mean, anyway, just love sort of just talking with you. And yeah, I think it's really important. So if you're good, then we do another time. But I don't want to keep sort of flipping all over the map, because it's super important information that's actually been going on for decades. And I don't think many people will really need to kind of like hear what we're kind of now saying in summarizing what you just said up, because we're having our experience now. But we're in it now. We were in it then in the 70s, you know, and all the rest of it. with the voice of like the Vrillon coming through, on like South Central sort of TV or what have you, and that we'll get into another time because you haven't got it. But that was amazing.
Yeah, because I was involved in that, if you remember.
Yeah.
And that's a good one to get into next
you know
time.
What? Yeah, should we leave that one for next time? Because
we could talk about the Green Stone if you want.
Oh, man. Yeah, there was two I kind of wanted to do, but I don't think we'll have time for both. So
one was like the
funnel, but I think we should give that a bit more time because it probably deserves it.
How long have we got now, then?
Probably about 10 minutes.
Yeah. We might be able to just about squeeze that in.
Well, go for it.
Go for the funnel, yeah?
Yeah, let's go for the funnel and see how we get. And if that's not, you know, if we're sort of stretching out too much, like two English people just bantering, then we'll do this another time.
We'll finish it off another time. Yeah. Okay, well, let's start then. 1994 it was. Now, I was so used to these experiences happening. And because I've got these ruptured discs in my spine, it was playing up. So I had my mattress in the living room where the coal fire was, and I was in bed. Now, I know when something's going to come. I might know a few seconds before, a couple of minutes. It might be an hour or two. It could even be a day or two. I woke up, and it was 2:50 a.m. It was dark, obviously, and I knew something was going to happen. I knew it was imminent. So what I do, I prop myself up against the recliner behind me, and I just quieten my mind and try and wait for the experience to happen. This golden funnel suddenly came through the window. It was like the big part of a trombone that was inside the house, but obviously it narrowed as it went through the window to the outside of the house. Now, that was amazing, but then out of it came hundreds and hundreds of tiny little stars that came out and danced around the top of the ceiling. And then numbers and letters and symbols also came out of the funnel and done the same thing. Now, I was watching them, but then I noticed in the funnel, coming out of the funnel, were these two beings, and they looked tiny inside the funnel, perhaps 6 inches long, of pure gold. But as they come out into the room, you never saw it happen. It was instant. They were about 6'2", 6'3". And they came and hovered over my body. They looked like they were so perfect and beautiful. It was like they had been carved by some sort of master carver of marble. And that they were just perfect. And they were brilliant, brilliant gold. They were male and female energies, and they hovered just above my head. They were, their faces were right next to mine. And then they merged into my body. And I just gave out a sort of woof as it hit me. The energy was so incredibly powerful. And then this light appeared. This light that was the most brilliant, brilliant light I've ever seen. And I knew I was going to go into that light. And at that moment in time, I felt unworthy to go into such a thing. But into the light, I did go. As soon as I went into that light, I was in, it's difficult to put into words, but it was complete and utter oneness. There was no separation. There was no inside. There was no outside. It was like I was the universe and the universe was me. It was all just utter oneness. But then I became aware of something else. Something that was behind this incredible oneness, and it was love with large capital letters, and it was holding everything in place. And what it showed me was that everything that originally came into being came from love. And then I came back out of the funnel, and as I did, they said to me that all these symbols, they contained, well, they said the knowledge of the universe, but I don't know about that. But they said it was going to go into my mind, and it would be released either by my higher self or by them at some future date. Well, it hasn't been yet, but I came out, and then all the numbers and letters and symbols came out and went back through the funnel, and the golden beings came out of my body. And they went back through the funnel, and the funnel disappeared. Now, some years later, I came across a lady called Dolores Cannon. She's worldwide known. Well, she's the late Dolores Cannon now. Mm. And in one of her books called The Custodians, she said in there, I've come across it so many times that it cannot be coincidence of a golden funnel that if someone is lying on a bed or a couch, it comes through the window, and if you're outside in the open in the car, it comes down from the sky, and out of that funnel comes letters and numbers and symbols and star-like objects. So it was happening to other people. And there was also something I found, or Fran found, that we can perhaps leave now, but it was to do with an ancient system of the masters that were initiating people, and it was to do with a golden funnel, and this is going back a long, long time. We're running out of time now.
No, we still got like 7 minutes.
Oh right. So it was the right eye of Horus mystery school teachings. Now also, when I gave a talk in Southern Ireland back in when would it have been? It was after I'd spoken in America. That was 2008. It must have been 2009. Robert Saller was there giving a talk also. Now, he's a person that was, he was high up in the military, and he was in charge of all the nuclear underground missiles that when these UFOs came over and nullified them all.
The red light, right?
Yeah, nullified them all.
Yeah.
In all the different bases around America. He was in charge of them. Now, he knew someone called Daniel Sheehan.
Oh, yes.
And you can look up and see who he
with
is, anyone that's listening. Now, he had come across this paperwork when he was working at Area 51. He smuggled under his armpit a piece of paper and a pencil. He sellotaped it under his armpit to get through security. He wrote down the symbols, that a photograph of them that were on the side of one of the bars of the crashed UFO in Roswell.
Mm-hmm.
And he smuggled it back out the same way. Robert Saller had these symbols on his desktop. Now, I was going through my talk. This was in Southern Ireland.
Yeah.
And I brought the symbols up on the screen. And another man that was there was Ross Hemsworth, and he used to do Glastonbury Radio and other things, and he was speaking as well. Robert Saller turned the laptop round to show Ross Hemsworth. I was still talking. But basically what had happened, he had the symbols on his screen. He said, look at this. These are the symbols of the Roswell crashed craft, and they are identical to the ones that Mike is showing that were given to him in the funnel. So, I mean, so it started to build more and more about this thing. It was an incredible event.
But, yeah, that's insane. Does that link in with the Rendlesham Forest event as well? Because I remember kind of hearing about that, and that was on Christmas Eve. Oh, I've forgotten, like, what year it was, 1980-something, maybe.
1981 or something.
Oh, fantastic. I had 82 in my head. 82, maybe. And then, yeah, so then someone then saw, like, symbols and such, and it seemed kind of similar to what you've got in the book, so Does It Rain in Other Dimensions, again, so feel free to pick it up, folks. There's a message there. Because if they're some of the symbols that you kind of got in the book, and they're messages of love, of being, not in like a kind of like a creepy way, but what do you think those symbols are? They seem to kind of marry up.
Well,
a couple of minutes.
the two golden beings when I was in this light. They said to me that each symbol contained a part of the knowledge of the universe. Now, I remember when I read Madame Blavatsky's The Secret Doctrine, published in 1888. I read it when I was 19. And she said in there, referring to the ancients of our world, especially in Tibet, that one symbol could contain an encyclopedia of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that even with the Bible, she said, you can turn the key 7 times, and each time you turn the key, there's another level of deeper meaning. That she said that most masters on this earth could only turn it 3 times, and there was another 4 turns of that key to understand the meaning. So it gives you some idea of the amount of knowledge that can be contained in a symbol. But as like you said earlier when we were chatting before the show, that every time you end up with more questions than answers, and I've found that throughout my life, but that pushes you on.
That seems to be the fuel, doesn't it? Like this, who are we, and all the good stuff, and then it seems that, yeah, again, that, there's more questions than answers, but they seem to get more and more beautiful, which is, like, really... And more and more connected, and it just all credits all the people who have done all the work in these arenas and such. But mostly, what's left for me is say thank you, Mike. Thank you so much.
Nice to talk to you, Joe. Yeah.
Oh man, thank you. A pleasure. And yeah, should we do this again?
We'll do it again. Yeah.
Because no, I think it's a bit of a crime to kind of just shoot over lots of your wonderful work and not probably what you've got. So. Thanks once again, Mike.
Okay, Joe.
And until next time, this has been LifeWise Radio, or Zoom in this case, so not a mic. And we'll do this again.
Yeah, right. Nice to talk to you. All the best, all right, mate.
Take care. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You are listening to the News for the Soul Radio Network. News for your soul. Life-changing broadcasts to souls around the world since January 1997.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.